The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, I saw this article called The 10 Biggest Risks to the Stock Market in 2015. It was extremely well written. I said, you know, we got to get this gentleman on. And so Peggy actually knows him, and I have not, and I'm looking forward to talking with him. We've got with us today Jeff Reeves. Jeff is a journalist and former New York Times editor with over a decade of newsroom experience. He's authored thousands of stories, and interesting, about crime, politics, entertainment, investing, which I kind of think all blend in together right now on Wall Street and have for several years. Currently, he's the editor and lead writer for InvestorPlace.com. I don't know how many of you know about that. You should. It's a finance and investing website that serves about 1 million unique monthly visitors. So, and he's written for the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, MarketWatch, SmartMoney, TheStreet.com, and a host of others. And we are pleased to have us with us today, Mr. Jeff Reeves. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. And thank you for being with us. So, well, it looks like we may even get a little sell-off in the market now. Are we beginning, are we picking up some of those risks that you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I kind of wrote that column a little while ago, but some of the items in there have really kind of come into focus in the last couple of days.
Yeah, they have.
You know, the stuff that we've been seeing out of China. You know, the stock market kind of took a hit there based on the idea that Beijing is going to kind of rein in its kind of debt-riddled economy and put some safeguards in place that could kind of hamper what is already proving to be some pretty slowing growth patterns there. So I remain convinced that China is going to be a big drag. It's funny that a lot of kind of armchair investors out there see China's growth rate and they're just like, well, it's double or triple America. How bad can it be? I think one of the most telling stats, though, is just a replacement rate for China's economy to make sure that they have enough jobs out there for all of the growing workers. It needs to grow at a 7.2% annual rate. So if it's less than 7.2%, there are some people who are not going to be able to find jobs because that's how big China's workforce is. So while on a raw numbers basis, their growth rate is quote unquote better than America's, I think it's important to realize they're in a very different stage of their economic life cycle right now, and they just need a bigger number. And it's going to be a big drag on global production, global demand for commodities, and we're seeing the shockwaves across the oil market right now, across many markets, just because there just isn't demand from China, and I kind of expect that to persist in 2015.
Yeah, in fact, I think a lot of people don't realize that, but you're absolutely right. Part of the situation with oil right now is demand in China is slowing down. In fact, when demand in China slows down, it affects everything. It affected Dr. Copper earlier this year. I mean, China is a huge consumer, and I think that when we didn't get the real estate crash that everybody anticipated earlier in the year, they thought, okay, China's out of the woods, and you know, it's back to good days. But you're absolutely right, and China is certainly the headline that's driving the markets down this morning. Well, let's kind of go down the list because I was very interested in several of your risks in 2015. The first one you had listed in your article was dividend stock shakeup. What's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a secret to anybody who's been watching this market that kind of the income investments have just been punished, and we've been, you know, not very kind to savers under this kind of 0% interest rate policy.
Right.
So there's been a lot of investors that have just gone into dividend stocks because if you're going to get yield, where else are you going to get it? But I think that there is cause for concern in 2015. We're seeing some kind of tightening of policy. There's overtures of a rate hike at the Fed. I don't necessarily think it's going to be early in 2015. Goldman Sachs had their report for their 2015 outlook, and they predicted September. I think that's probably more right. But the bottom line is that if rates do start to tick up, either because of a Fed rate hike or because, excuse me, just because the market decides that it's going to. Remember, the rates have been effectively zero, but there's a lot of wiggle. We went from a 3% on a 10-year to 2.2 right now. So yields can move a lot even if the Fed doesn't take action. It could go up from the 2.2% on the Fed yield to 10-year to 3. And if it does, you can get a 3% yield in Treasury bonds with less risk, and you're worried about the market. Why wouldn't you do that? So I think there's definitely going to be some pressures on these dividend stocks that are out there, the kind of low-growth consumer staple names that honestly don't pay very good dividends, like your Colgate-Palmolives and your Coca-Colas of the world pay dividends in the low 2s. They don't really have growth prospects that are incredibly compelling right now. There's also going to be a tailwind for a lot of these, or a headwind for a lot of these multinationals with a strong dollar environment that makes their corporate profits abroad not as impactful. So I think people who have kind of hide out in these multinational consumer staples low growth plays for the dividends because they don't have any other alternative. The market may kind of shift in 2015 and they move away from these plays. So I think that there is a risk that capital leaves those stocks and kind of really hurts the income investor who thinks they have a stable play there.
But now if money, and I tend to agree with you to a certain extent, one of my favorite terms for the market that we have right now is called a TINA market. There is no other alternative. And I think the market's gone up a lot just because there's very few places to invest. And so you're right, particularly for income, particularly for boomers that are at or nearing retirement, they've been looking for income and they can't get it at their CD, so they started buying dividend stocks. But yeah, assuming that we start getting a sell-off in those stocks, where does that money go? Because even if the interest rates are raised by the Fed, we know they're not going to go from a 2.25% 10-year to a 5% 10-year. You know, overnight, you know, a raise might be a quarter of a point, half a point, which isn't going to make a measurable difference really on your CD rate. Where do you think this money might exit to?
Well, true, and for the record, I'm not saying that I think there's going to be like the great rotation that some people talk about, where the stocks are just going to tank, where all the money leaves equities and goes into bonds. But
right.
I do think that what we've seen, particularly in that individual segment that I'm talking about, those kind of like theoretically low-risk consumer staple stocks, I think that if you look at the valuations, they're just really stretched. Like, I don't know why you would pay a forward earnings multiple of 17 for a company like Colgate right now. And I think part of the reason that people are doing that is, like you said, there's no alternative. They want the income. If they have other alternatives, if you want risk, you can get risk elsewhere, but maybe at a better price. If you want income, you can get income at a better price. I think that just that specific segment of the market is pressured. I'm not saying that the capital automatically leaves the stock market and goes into bonds, because I agree with you there. I don't think that the, you know, 5 basis points is not going to be a big deal. It just causes the great rotation. But I do think that people are going to start moving their money when they start to see some of these stocks underperform. We saw that in utility stocks a couple years ago, if you remember. They were the hottest in 2011, and then they grossly underperformed because I think people hit out there for yield, and then after they started to take a hit, people move their money. So I'm not saying that, you know, these stocks are going to be dead and that the market's going to tank, but I do think we're going to see some rotation out of those defensive consumer staple plays in 2015. It's not a big panic scenario, but I do think
right.
it's going to be underperformance.
Right. Now, a couple of the areas that they talked about earlier this year that might have an opportunity was the Eurozone, but one of the risks that you have listed is the Eurozone deflation, and I understand from what I read that France is already in a deflationary environment. How do you see the Eurozone in the next year?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I wrote this article a little while ago, and now we just got the news that, you know, Greece is in trouble again. Surprise,
right.
surprise. So, I mean, the Eurozone has struggled with this for some time. You know, the triple-dip recession, they're trying to get their way out of it. Who knows if the central bank policy that they're taking there is going to eventually get them on the right track. But the important thing to remember, though, is that the Eurozone is not like America. There is a lot of difference from region to region. In some places, like France or Spain, for instance, just reported a decline in prices in November. It's their fifth straight drop, the fifth straight monthly drop. Greece is going to be a mess again. So I think that there might be individual areas of strength if you want to pick stocks or regions. But, you know, broadly, I think that Europe is definitely in trouble. And let's forget that, you know, the problems that we've seen in China are largely a function of globalization, too, that there just isn't demand for their products. Europe very much needs America to have a strong demand for everything that they're trying to sell. And Germany needs strong demand from the rest of the Eurozone to sell within the region. And so if you start to see trouble there for some of the smaller member states, it naturally is going to trickle over. And I think that risk of falling prices and falling demand is definitely going to be a problem in 2015.
I agree. Jeff, can you hang on? I want to ask you a few more questions about your article. Stay with us, folks. We're talking to Jeff Reeves, editor and lead writer for InvestorPlace.com. We'll be back with you in just a few moments.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got a great guest with us this morning. We've got Jeff Reeves. Jeff is a journalist, former New York Times editor, but he is currently editor and lead writer of InvestorPlace.com. a finance and investing website that serves about 1 million unique monthly visitors. By the way, Jeff, before we get started, how can they talk a little bit about investorplace.com, maybe how they can get in touch with you? Commercial time. Let's do a little commercial.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. InvestorPlace is we like to call it an actionable website for investors. We don't do a lot of kind of boring news and earnings reports. We're all about opinions and commentary. And it's all free, so you can go to our website and check it out and sign up for our email list, and we'll send you kind of trades that we're interested in, sectors that we're watching. It's a pretty good conversation. There's lots of active comments on the article, so if anybody who's interested in actually trading stocks, buying ETFs, managing their own money, it's a great place for the active individual investor to get actual, you know, commentary they can use as opposed to just headlines.
Absolutely. It's a place that we go, folks. A lot of great writers there. We know several, and one of which we're talking to this morning. Anyway, Jeff, in the first segment, you talked a little bit about the Fed. Let's expound a little bit on that, because the Fed seems to have been driving our world now for several years, and there's a lot of interest on what they're going to do next. There's a lot of second guessing. Most of it is wrong. But obviously, when we even started out with QEs years ago, we are kind of in uncharted territory. I don't think we're writing a new graduate school textbook is what we're doing, and no one really knows how we're going to get out of this. We have a huge amount of debt, but there's a lot of concern over when the Feds will raise rates, how much they'll raise rates, under what circumstances. Can you expound on what concerns or that you might have, or where this could be a big risk for investors coming in 2015?
Sure, and I want to say up front that I actually kind of like the Fed. I think a central bank is very good for America. I don't advocate a return to the gold standard or anything like that. I think having a flexible currency is proper. And I think that it's also important for people to remember that the analogies of America as kind of a household that we need to run the budget the same way are kind of not fair. I mean, we're a currency issuer. We're not really run the same way as a household is, as much as people would like it to be cash flow positive for our government. We don't have to be. So all of that said, I think that it is worth noting we are in uncharted territory. You're right. We're kind of writing a new chapter in monetary policy here. And so even the smartest people in the room who were, I believe, validated by the notion of quantitative easing and loose interest rate policy to kind of through the recession. It looks like phase one has happened. What phase two is and where we go from here, quite honestly, nobody knows. And frankly, the rest of the world is kind of catching on to the stimulative kind of strategies of America. The European Central Bank has taken its rates to fresh record lows and their stimulus plans there because they're trying to get their economy started. So everyone's really imitating us. So there's a lot riding on where we go from here. Because just as other central banks imitated us in how to get their struggling economies working again, they're going to imitate us in how to get out. So we better do a darn good job navigating these waters properly in 2015, or else if the market gets rattled or for some reason things don't pan out as the policymakers had planned, there could be some serious fallout because, I mean, there's really no other engine of growth of stability in the world right now other than America. And like you said, it's largely because of the Fed.
Yeah, it is. And the other area that we haven't really talked about yet, but has been talked about a lot, particularly over the last 6 months, are the emerging markets, which are highly dependent upon the United States. And what is your thought about the emerging markets? Do you believe that they are a risk or an opportunity for 2015?
Well, I do think that there's going to be kind of pockets of strength there. I think we talked briefly about China before. I do think that China is just in big trouble right now. So I certainly wouldn't play around in China. I do think there may be some opportunity in India, mostly because India has underperformed in the past few years. It's had its own struggles, but it seems to be turning around. It seems to have some better policies in place. But I think that with emerging markets broadly, people make the mistake of thinking that they have this choice between developed and emerging, and they kind of go all in. And that's not maybe a bad idea in your 401k to buy a diversified emerging markets fund for a little bit of exposure. But the world is much more complicated than that right now, and I think there are regions that you should just avoid wholesale and other areas that I think may have better potential. I'm looking at frontier markets right now that I think could kind of rebound faster. Again, remember the notion of emerging markets is that they're more flexible and fast moving. And if China as an emerging market isn't moving fast enough, you may want to take a step down and go to even smaller countries like Thailand or Vietnam. If we do start to see a snapback in demand, they're going to feel it first because it doesn't take a lot of capital to move things in a region like that. The flip side is there's a heck of a lot more risk because it's only going to take one or two missteps to cause some real pain for investors. But I think in a diversified portfolio, I would largely steer clear of wide emerging market bets. And I kind of pick and choose your markets that you believe in. Again, a couple that I'm kind of hot on right now, I do think India is going to be better next year. I would avoid Russia because of the geopolitics, but I would look at India as the only brick that I'm really looking at right now. I don't like Brazil too much either. And I would avoid those guys and then move over to the frontier markets like Thailand and Vietnam, honestly.
Okay, so I was going to ask you what the frontier markets were, but Thailand, Vietnam, yeah. No, you're right. All right, what about the dollar? You had down as a risk strong dollar headwinds.
Yeah, as I mentioned before when we were talking about some of the dividend stocks, you know, people, the patriots out there love to see a strong currency, and I agree with the notion that having a stable America that is the kind of fallback of the world as stability is a very good thing. But the simple rules of currency exchange rates mean that if I'm a company like Colgate or Coca-Cola or even Apple, if you're domiciled in the U.S. and you do business overseas, the currency exchange rate is going to weigh, it's going to shave a couple basis points off of your revenue and result in lower profits. Not a big deal for high growth companies that can make up for it. But again, some of these slower growth plays that are out there, the consumer staples of the world like Procter and Gamble, when you make your sales in Europe and you're only predicting 2 or 3% sales growth in some region, and that all goes away because of currency fluctuations, it's not a good place to be in. So I think it's important for people to remember that while a strong dollar is kind of a sign of the world's faith in America, the exchange rates don't work in our favor. I mean, right, that's why a lot of these nations like Germany and Japan have been working on debasing their currency, because it allows for easier access to overseas markets and better sales results. So the flip side, the double-edged sword of a strong dollar is, while it shows a lot of confidence, it's not all that great for corporate profitability for those big blue-chip multinationals. And I think that it's not a big deal if you have growth behind you, but for some of these slower growth companies out there, we just saw really bad numbers from McDonald's. That's another company that's going to hit because of the headwind of a strong dollar and currency exchange rates in 2015.
All right, one last question. Is there a black swan out there that you're looking at?
I mean, you know, it's really hard to predict any of these things. I would say that, you know, the conspiracy theorist in me, I this time of year, I have kids, they're sick all the time. I think Ebola has shown us, too, that, you know, kind of the healthcare-related risks are very real and can disrupt the global economy.
Right.
So if I was going to place my money on a 1,000-to-1 or a 1,000,000-to-1 bet next year, I would say that it's going to be another kind of like public health crisis like that that's going to have serious drag on the economy. It was the weather last year, right? And to the beginning
right.
of 2014, it was just a big snowstorm. So who's to say it couldn't be a bad cold and flu season that weighs on us in 2015? I after Ebola, I think stranger things could happen.
I guess. Well, I hope that you and your family get through the flu season well. My kids are a little older than that, but I remember what it was like to be a young father. So I hope you, your wife, and your family get through it well. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for sharing. Have a Merry Christmas, Jeff. We'll look forward to talking
you
to
too.
You
later
on next year. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.